This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. GEICO could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to GEICO.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Three Americans are home. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Thursday, May 10th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Three Korean Americans imprisoned in North Korea have been freed. They flew to Joint Base Andrews this morning, where they were met by President Trump.
The White House picked to head the CIA is promising the agency will not return to post-9/11 interrogation techniques. Hear testimony from Gina Haspel.
Tensions are mounting in the Middle East. Israel has struck Iranian targets in Syria after claiming its soldiers were fired upon in the Golan Heights.
And why asking Alexa to find a credit card for you may not be such a good idea.
Alexa will ask you various questions about your desires and your spending habits. And eventually, once you get through that process, Amazon Alexa will actually suggest a certain credit card for you to get.
MarketWatch reporter Maria LaMagna on the new skill for Amazon's Alexa. Her report in about 20 minutes. President Trump in the wee hours this morning welcomed home three Korean Americans detained by North Korea after they landed at Joint Base Andrews outside Washington. Pyongyang released the men after more than a year of imprisonment, allowing them to fly home with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Their detainment had been a source of diplomatic friction ahead of a summit between Mr. Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
My proudest achievement will be, this is a part of it, but will be when we denuclearize that entire peninsula. This is what people have been waiting for a long time.
The release contrasts with the case last year of Otto Warmbier, a University of Virginia undergrad who was returned from imprisonment in North Korea in a coma and then died 6 days later. The release fulfills a long-standing objective for Washington ahead of negotiations that the two sides say will aim to remove nuclear weapons from the peninsula and formally end the Korean War. Their summit seems likely to take place in Singapore. Let's get more now on these developments from Jonathan Chang, Wall Street Journal bureau chief in Seoul, South Korea. He's been tracking these events all night. Jonathan, explain the significance of this.
Well, I don't need to tell you, we have a summit meeting coming up between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea, and that's the first time any meeting has happened between the sitting U.S. president and North Korea's leader. But ahead of that, the big question was whether or not the U.S. would be able to get the release of these three detained Americans who are in North Korea. They're not the first ones to be detained in the country. We've had probably a good dozen, maybe two dozen over the last decade or so. But, particularly at a time when the two countries are trying to hammer out potentially a big deal on North Korea's nuclear program, it was just one of these big lingering obstacles and was really seen as a sign of whether or not North Korea was serious about wanting to work with the Americans.
Why not, if you're North Korea, hang on to these guys for additional leverage?
Well, that's always been the thinking, is that North Korea takes them, perhaps not with the intention of using them as bargaining chips, but they certainly become that way. And you're right, they could hold out for more, but it does fit with the general direction that they're moving in at this point. They've clearly pivoted from taking a more confrontational approach with all these missile launches, the nuclear test, all of these threats that we heard from Kim Jong-un last year. And, that was a part of the ratcheting up of tensions. So were the taking of these hostages, these detainees. And now what we're seeing is we're seeing an unraveling of that. We're seeing trust being built up again, and this is just part of that process as well.
Wow. The release of these detainees is such a 180 from the Otto Warmbier case from last year. How come?
Yeah, well, in that case, it was tragic, and we still don't have the full story. Otto's parents have a view of what they think most likely happened. We've heard different accounts from different people. At the end of the day, I don't know that we'll ever know the real reason, but I don't suspect that the North Koreans had intended things to play out the way that they had.
Okay.
Obviously, he was a young man, and many of the detainees that are in ill health when they're detained there, typically in their 50s, 60s, 70s even, and the three men that were released today were all sort of in their 50s. Otto was just 21 or 22 or something like that at that time. So we really don't know what the true story is, but I think especially after that incident, it wasn't a given that we would get these three men out in good condition. And so that was really one of the big questions that we had lingering here, but they all looked to be okay. They were going up and down the stairs fine, and they, I can't diagnose them from here, but they seemed all right to me.
Yeah. We're speaking with Jonathan Cheng, the Wall Street Journal's bureau chief in Seoul, South Korea, talking about the release of these three Americans from North Korea who arrived at Joint Andrews Base this morning outside Washington. So you mentioned before, like, the rhetoric, the missile launches, the nuclear tests, the threats, that's all died down. Has there been some sort of significant change, or is North Korea after something else here ahead of this summit with Mr. Trump? What's going on?
Well, Donald Trump's explanation is that it is sanctions and pressure that have led North Korea to make this decision. I think that thinking goes. We know that he was successful in getting the UN Security Council to impose several rounds of tighter sanctions on North Korea. The U.S. also made its own moves. South Korea also imposed these sanctions as well. And no question, they were the toughest sanctions that have ever been put on North Korea. But whether or not that was what brought North Korea to the table is really a question for Kim Jong-un, and I wish we could just ask him.
Yeah.
North Korea has said, and they said it again to Mike Pompeo when he was in Pyongyang, they said actually sanctions had nothing to do with this. They said it was the will of the Korean people.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Cheng, Wall Street Journal bureau chief, with us today from Seoul, South Korea. Exchange of rocket fire in the Middle East. Israel's military carried out strikes against Iranian targets in Syria after it said Iranian forces based there fired rockets at its soldiers in the Golan Heights. The Wall Street Journal says Iran's attack in the Golan appears to be the first time Iran has opened fire on Israeli targets from Syria. The Israeli military said dozens of Iranian military sites across southern and central Syria were struck in return. It called the strikes its largest ever operation against Iranian positions in Syria. White House spokeswoman Sarah Sanders.
We're going to continue to put maximum pressure, enormous sanctions on them. All of the sanctions that were in place before the deal are back in place, and we are preparing to add additional sanctions that may come as early as next week.
In a separate incident, Iran-backed Houthi rebels in Yemen fired a barrage of missiles into Saudi Arabia yesterday. Those attacks were said to be an early indication that Iran and its allies are flexing their muscles in the Middle East after the U.S. withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal. The strikes underlined the risk of direct confrontation, by the way, between Iran and Israel. Until now, Iran had held back from any retaliatory responses to recent Israeli strikes on its assets in Syria. It is 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Thursday. President Trump's nominee to be the next CIA director is promising that the spy agency will not bring back its outlawed interrogation techniques if she's confirmed. That was the testimony yesterday before the Senate Intelligence Committee by Gina Haspel, aiming to become the CIA's first female director. She's currently deputy director. Senators focused much of their questioning on Ms. Haspel's oversight in 2002 of a secret site in Thailand where suspected terrorists were subjected to waterboarding and confined in coffin-shaped boxes for hours during President Bush's administration following the 9/11 terror attacks against America. She also faced questions from Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton about her involvement in the destruction of 92 videotapes that showed a prisoner being waterboarded.
Did any lawyer at any time in any organization of the federal government say that there was a legal prohibition to destroy those tapes?
Senator, they did not. They were very consistent that there was no legal requirement to preserve the tapes because of the written record.
It's not clear if she'll have the votes for confirmation, by the way. Arizona Republican John McCain is urging colleagues to vote no. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Trump greeted three Americans released by North Korea at an airbase near Washington early this morning, a stepping stone to a historic summit with Kim Jong-un. Trump and First Lady Melania made the short helicopter ride from the White House to Joint Base Andrews to personally welcome the three back to the U.S.
I'm very honored to have helped the three folks. They're great people.
Trump praised Kim for freeing the Americans ahead of the planned summit between the two leaders. Israel's army says it carried out widespread raids against Iranian targets in Syria overnight after rocket fire towards its forces, which it blamed on Iran, marking a sharp escalation between the two enemies. The raids were one of the largest Israeli military operations in recent years and the biggest such assault on Iranian targets. A dam burst its banks in Kenya's Rift Valley, killing at least two dozen people and forcing hundreds from their homes. Water burst through the banks of the Patel Dam last night. Rescue operations by disaster management teams have rescued dozens from the mud, but many are feared still trapped. Hawaii's Kilauea volcano could soon send boulders and ash shooting out of its summit crater in the kind of explosive eruption last displayed nearly a century ago. Scientists say the risk of an explosive summit eruption will rise in coming weeks, which led Governor David Ige to take steps to make sure hazardous materials at threatened geothermal plant are properly secured.
We want to ensure that we can take the actions necessary to remove the hazardous materials from the site, and then most importantly, to be prepared to prevent a blowout of the wellhead.
Kilauea has destroyed 36 structures since it began releasing lava last week. Our homes are getting ever so smart. The nation's largest home builder, Lennar, says standard features in its new homes will include built-in Wi-Fi, smart locks, doorbells, thermostats, and lights, all controlled by Amazon's voice-activated digital assistant, Alexa. Each house will come with two Alexa-enabled smart speakers, an Echo Show, and an Echo Dot. New homeowners will also get a free visit from an Amazon technician to help set everything up and teach them how to use it.
And then your home will get hacked, and it'll go down like this. Alexa, unlock all of Jennifer's doors. Thank you. Then I walk in and steal all your stuff. 23 minutes after the hour, on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. The personal finance company NerdWallet has announced a new skill for Amazon Alexa, which is now live in Alexa's skill store. You can now ask NerdWallet to find you the best credit card. How it works, from MarketWatch reporter Maria LaMagna. Maria, set this up.
So the personal finance company NerdWallet has announced that it created a new skill for Amazon's Alexa that can actually help you pick a credit card if you're looking for one. So they created it to sort of replicate the kind of conversations you have with friends and family when you're looking for a card. Alexa will ask you various questions about your desires and your spending habits. And eventually, once you get through that process, Amazon Alexa will actually suggest a certain credit card for you to get.
Wow. Are you giving up a lot of information here personally?
You are giving up some. You do have to say sort of a range of what your credit score is. You don't have to say what your income is, but you do have to say, you know, I'm looking for cash back or travel rewards. So you are giving a decent amount of information that is related to your sort of financial history.
Wow. I guess the cynic in me wants to know, is Amazon getting some sort of referral fee if it directs us to a certain credit card?
Right. So who is NerdWallet. The company, part of its business model is that they have online recommendations for credit cards. They have kind of an online system for basically doing the same thing that this Alexa skill does, asks you different questions and eventually suggests a card to you. So eventually, if you decide to get the card right after getting that recommendation from NerdWallet, they may get a commission on whatever, they might sort of get a per card commission. So they set up deals with the credit card companies that way. So that is something to keep in mind. They say it doesn't impact their recommendation, and there's a lot of cards that they recommend that they don't get a commission from, okay. But, it's just something to keep in mind.
And then why might this not be a good idea?
So, I think in this day and age, we are getting worried about the amount of information that we're giving out about ourselves. Alexa, Amazon and NerdWallet say you don't have to worry about that. But there have been some concerns about Internet of Things and just, hackers' ability to get control of various household items that are, connected to you. So that's just something to think about. But there are some things that you can do to keep it safe, you know, making sure that the Wi-Fi that you're using is secure, you know, changing your password often. Don't ask any voice-activated devices to remember sensitive information. Okay. So you should really be monitoring because, you know, it's sort of those same concerns that you would have about any major financial information you're putting out there.
Thanks, Maria. MarketWatch personal finance reporter Maria LaMagna. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well with the username @GordonDeal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for four straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan as the most improved state for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
At Dell, we know running a small business takes hard work. As a thank you, for all of Small Business Month, we're offering up to 40% off select PCs with 8th Gen Intel Core processors and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with a small business technology advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL. Special financing available to qualified business customers when using Dell Business Credit. Go to dell.com/dbcpromos for details.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter @ThisMorningShow, like us on Facebook, or send us an email thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Thursday, May 10. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Three American detainees released from North Korea are home. Ford is suspending production of the F-150 pickup because it's short on supplies. Homes in California about to get pricier after the Energy Commission there mandated solar panels on residential buildings. Warnings about potentially explosive eruptions from Hawaii's Kilauea volcano that could send pebble-sized projectiles for miles. And the latest idiotic teen challenge that may be going viral. That story in about 15 minutes. When it comes to the U.S. withdrawing from the Iran nuclear agreement, the question facing the Trump administration and Congress now is, what's next? We're joined by Indiana Congresswoman Susan Brooks. Congresswoman, your reaction to the decision?
I did not like the deal from the very beginning. I thought it was very flawed for a number of reasons. It really never ended down the road their nuclear program. In fact, the deal would allow them to obtain a nuclear weapon in less than 8 years from now. Mm. I also thought that Iran never gave the countries in the deal the adequate inspector accessibility sure. to their nuclear facilities. And I think that we also did nothing to address what we know to be their very dangerous ballistic missile program, which they have which they have been testing and which we believe their ballistic missile has very significant capabilities. And if they continue to develop nuclear capabilities, that type of missile program could deliver, you know, nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And so I think the range we know could destroy Israel. They continue to denounce Israel, our, you know, greatest ally in the Middle East. And then also with the funding that we provided them, we believe they've continued to fund terrorist organizations. Terrorist organizations, you know, Hezbollah, Hamas, and so forth, they also, you know, have funded the rebels over in Yemen and are causing, I think, great destabilization in the Middle East. I've also been very opposed to Iran's role in Syria and in propping up the Assad regime and what he has done to his people in Syria by, you know, the chemical weapons they've used in Syria. There are just so many things that I think were a bad deal to begin with. I believe they've continued to act in bad faith and have been bad actors.
And looking forward then, what now? What would you like to see happen now?
Well, I believe we have to continue to, we have to reimpose tough sanctions involving whether it is their energy sector, their financial sector. We've got, you know, all of that money that they got for this deal, there is no evidence that they were actually helping their own people. And so I think the president is trying to say to the Iranian people, you know, who protested last year against the Iranian regime in power, you know, we want to support the people of Iran without supporting the regime and the leadership controlling Iran. And so, you know, I do believe that by continuing to institute and reimposing sanctions, people who do business in Iran, you know, we should stop the type of business happening in Iran right now. And anyone that is doing that type of business needs to wind down those activities. I think those I think are critically important. I also think we need to obviously continue to negotiate, and I think it is important to continue discussions with Iran and let them know that the types of things that we think are important are, you know, that they cannot continue to fund terrorist organizations. They should not continue to threaten the United States, as, you know, members of their parliament continue to do. They cannot you know, continue to advance their ballistic missile program. And I think the international community needs to continue to condemn their violations of human rights within their own country.
We're speaking with Indiana Congresswoman Susan Brooks. You think Iran is willing to renegotiate something here?
Well, I don't know that they're willing to renegotiate per se, but by us reinstituting sanctions, we need them to come back to the table and demonstrate to the rest of the world that they are not going to continue to engage in the behaviors that they have been doing. You know, their anti-American rhetoric, their funding of terrorism, particularly, and the destabilization in the Middle East, they need to come with a very different mindset as to how they're going to move forward in the world. You know, I think that Nikki, our ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, has been incredibly strong. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, I think, will be an incredibly strong voice in trying to continue to demonstrate to Iran that they have to dramatically shift the way, you know, they are operating in the Middle East in order for us to move forward with them in any deal.
Thanks, Susan. Congresswoman Susan Brooks from Indiana. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome to Friday Eve. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, your mom always told you not to cry over spilled milk, but even she might shed a tear over $800,000 in spilled dimes. This after a tractor-trailer traveling southbound on Interstate 15 overturned near Glendale, Nevada this week, spewing 8 million dimes onto the side of the desert. Officials say the silver Volvo tractor trailer was contracted by the U.S. Treasury Department to transport the currency. Wasn't clear what caused the truck to veer off the road, striking the right guardrail before flipping over and dumping all the dimes. The driver and passenger were transported to the hospital, but thankfully their injuries are not life-threatening. A recovery team was sent in to clean up the spilled change, an effort which took hours, but according to the Highway Patrol, they likely didn't get them all, making for a potential new hotspot for metal detectors. Enthusiasts to uncover treasure both buried and on the surface.
Wow.
I'm sure they had some kind of machine or something, you would think, to come in there and,
yeah,
and do that.
It's called a front end loader.
But I mean, you know the dimes, if you ever try to pick up a dime,
yeah,
dimes are the hardest thing in the world to pick up because they're so tiny.
Yep. That's why they're referred to as one thin dime.
Right. I just had to get a bunch of coins out of my car the other day. I had sort of my little change holder or whatever.
Yeah, that doggone dime.
I sent my son in with his smaller fingers to do it. My six-year-old. I sent him in there. I said, here, take this cup. You get all the change out of daddy's car because
right.
I don't want to be bothered.
Wow. This is not what they call, by the way, dropping a dime.
No.
Yeah.
that's a whole different deal.
How about that?
Yes.
8 million dimes.
Yes.
Imagine
in the desert, in that, not like in the sand and stuff, right, too. So I'm sure cleaning that up is all kinds of fun.
Right. And how about if you were the team charged with putting them in those, remember those little paper rolls?
Right.
That like fit, I don't know how many dimes like fit in one roll, but imagine you're that team and had to do that.
Yeah. They're gonna be sorting out this mess,
yeah,
for a while.
We're going to be here for a while.
And Gordon, it's not just cold, hard cash spilling onto highways this week. If you prefer something sweet over coins with FDR's face on them, we take you to Poland, where tons of liquid chocolate spilled onto a roadway yesterday morning after another truck overturned. The crash occurred at 5:30 a.m. on the road between Warsaw and Poznan. Once again, we're not sure why the driver hit a barrier and spilled the chocolate all over, but officials say that large quantities of water would be required to clear it off the road. They had to move quickly, though, as the cooling, hardening chocolate was proving to be more of a problem to clean up than the liquid stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, which doesn't, that seems a little counterintuitive. You would think if it was hard, it would be easier to just kind of come in and scoop it up.
Chunk it out somehow.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah. I guess so, but I guess so much of it, they just want to take the water and just spray it away.
How about the sweet smell attracting bees and birds and all that stuff,
geez,
right?
Yeah.
Trying to
cleanup. That's another thing, yeah. Get that done quickly.
Well, convenient of you, by the way, to avoid any discussion of the Mets this morning.
Perhaps
I noticed that you wanted to work in turned over trucks stories instead of talking about your Mets batting out of order yesterday.
Yes.
Great rally kill by the Mets. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. There's another idiotic teen challenge making the rounds, from swallowing cinnamon right to eating Tide Pods. Viral teen challenges have swept across the internet in recent years. However, it's not clear how widespread the latest one is. It's called the deodorant challenge. USA Today says a mom in the United Kingdom sent a chilling warning to other parents on Facebook about it, saying it caused second-degree burns on her daughter's arm. The idea, though seemingly dangerous, is simple. A person sprays aerosol deodorant directly onto their skin to test their endurance. Jamie Prescott wrote, "These are the damaging results of something known as the deodorant challenge. Currently doing the rounds, literally involves spraying deodorant onto someone else for as long as possible." She suggests the trend was gaining traction at schools in the UK. She said the injuries might require a skin graft 3 weeks after her daughter sustained the burns. By the way, in 2010, the medical journal Pediatrics published a report warning about deodorant spray as a cause of cold burns after two people suffered first-degree burns. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
President Trump welcomed home a trio of U.S. citizens who had been detained in North Korea for more than a year as their plane from Pyongyang landed at a military facility outside Washington early this morning. Trump thanked North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
He was nice in letting him go before the meeting. I mean, frankly, we didn't think this was going to happen, and it did.
The medical plane carrying the men touched down at 2:42 a.m. local time as Trump and Vice President Mike Pence waited nearby. Trump joked that the return of the detainees may have helped set a new record for TV ratings so early in the morning. President Trump's CIA nominee says she doesn't believe torture works as an interrogation technique and that her strong moral compass would prevent her from carrying out any presidential order she found objectionable. Under questioning by members of the Senate Intelligence Committee, acting CIA Director Gina Haspel said she would not permit the spy agency to restart the kind of harsh detention and interrogation program it ran at black sites after September 11th.
I can offer you my personal commitment, clearly and without reservation, that under my leadership, on my watch, CIA will not restart a detention and interrogation program.
But Republican Senator John McCain last night urged his colleagues to reject Haspel, saying she failed to adequately answer questions about her role in the agency's torture program. Kentucky Republican Rand Paul also says he'll vote no, meaning GOP leaders may not have enough votes to confirm her. A group of House Republicans are pushing ahead in an effort to force floor votes on a pack of four different immigration proposals, despite objections by GOP congressional leaders. If all Democrats back the effort, Republicans need 25 of their members to sign on to a discharge petition filed yesterday that would force a vote on several different proposals. And California has taken a major step toward becoming the first state to require solar panels on nearly all new homes. The California Energy Commission voted 5-0 to approve a mandate that residential buildings up to 3 stories high, including single-family homes and condos, be built with solar installation starting in 2020.
Lest you think that homes were getting too cheap in California, this will tack on an extra, $8,000 to $10,000 bucks or something like that.
But they should get some of that back with savings from energy.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. A California man has offered up his truck, a trailer, and even a kidney in the hopes that someone would be able to save his wife's life. In a plea to Facebook users, Verlon Robinson offered to give up the items to anyone who would be willing to donate a piece of their liver to his sick wife. Mr. Robinson, who's 55, has been married to Marie Robinson for 25 years. Fox News says about 3 years ago, Ms. Robinson was diagnosed with cirrhosis of the liver. Marie and Verlon Robinson often travel from the home in Sanger, California, to San Francisco, more than 3 hours away, for doctor's appointments and tests. Ms. Robinson, who's also diabetic and has lost about 70 pounds recently, is on a transplant list, but she isn't high enough to receive a liver from an organ donor who has died yet. And by the time she is high enough on that list, Mr. Robinson worries that she'll be out of time to wait. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.